Good morning. It is good to be in God's house on this beautiful morning, and it is very good to see each of you here. This morning, I want us to look at a pretty comprehensive story. So we're going to cover a lot of ground this morning, and we will start with the book of John, chapter 21, verses 15 through 17. I know everybody, when the preacher says we're going to cover a lot of ground, they go, ooh. It's not going to be that bad, I promise. It really won't. So, okay. John 21, 15 through 17. So when they had dined, Jesus saith to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these? He saith unto him, Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He saith unto him, Feed my lambs. He saith unto him again the second time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? And he saith unto him, Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. Saith unto him, Feed my sheep. And he saith unto him the third time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? Peter was grieved because he had said unto him the third time, Lovest thou me? And he said unto him, Lord, thou knowest all things. Thou knowest that I love thee. Jesus saith unto him, Feed my sheep. So may God add to the reading of his scripture. There is some context we need to look at in order to understand this dialogue a little bit better. Jesus and Peter had a special relationship. Of all of the people that we see throughout the New Testament, there is more recorded dialogue between Peter and Jesus than there are between Jesus and any other person in the entire New Testament. Jesus and Peter had a kind of conversation that's going on behind the scenes all the way through the New Testament. And we're going to look at some of those in at least a small amount of detail. Peter was one of the first disciples. In the first chapter of John, it is recorded that when Jesus met Peter, Jesus said unto him, Thou art Simon, the son of Jonas. Thou shalt be called Cephas, which is by interpretation a rock. And we saw that again a little bit later. That was kind of their introduction. There was a beginning relationship there. In Matthew chapter 14, verses 25 through 31, Jesus came to the disciples who were out during a storm on the sea, and he came walking on the water. And while the disciples were afraid, Peter said, Lord, bid me to come unto thee. And we know the narrative. Peter got down out of the boat. Jesus said, Come. And he got down out of the boat and started walking toward Jesus. And he heard the thunder and he saw the waves and the wind. And he took his eyes off of Jesus and he began to sink. And Jesus had to save him. He cried out and Jesus had to rescue him. If you look at that narrative a little bit, Peter is a little bit like almost like a child, a teenager. I can imagine one of my boys when they were teenagers saying, Dad, can I do that? Can I do that? And then starting out and getting in trouble. And that was kind of Peter. He was that way in a great many of regards. In Matthew chapter 16, verses 15 and 16, Jesus asked his disciples, Who do you say that I am? And Peter said, Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. And again, we know the rest of that narrative. Jesus said, Flesh and blood hasn't revealed it to you, but the Spirit of God, you shall be upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And that was that kind of faith, that blind, trusting faith that a young man has. There is a reason young men say things like that and do things like that. They have more of a spirit of courage, I guess. I think sometimes they think they're 10 feet tall and bulletproof. I did when I was a teenager, and age has a way of letting you know that you're not 10 foot tall and bulletproof, right? A young man probably would not, an older man probably wouldn't have said that. He'd been a little more reasoned, a little more thoughtful. But Peter stood up just boldly and said, "You're the Christ. You're the Son of God." In Matthew chapter 17, we keep progressing through the gospel. Jesus took Peter and two other disciples up on a mountain and was transfigured before them. And his countenance glowed like the sun, and there appeared with him two others, Moses and Elias. And if you remember that narrative, Peter started talking. He said, "You know, it is really good that we're here with you. We need to build a monument here and a monument here, et cetera, et cetera." And God the Father had to speak up and say, "Peter, hush." He said, "This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. Hear ye him." In other words, shut up and listen. Again, kind of a thing that a young man would do. Be talking when you need to be listening. And that was Peter. That was kind of the sort of person he was. In Mark 22, verses 31 and 32, Jesus said to Peter, "Behold, Satan hath desired to have you, that he might sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for thee, that when thy faith fail not, and when thou art converted, strengthen thy brethren." In Matthew 26:34, Jesus said unto Peter, "Verily I say unto thee, this night before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice," or three times. When Jesus was in the middle of the worst trial in history, the mock trial, when they were accusing him, when the main thing he needed was someone to stand up and say, "I know him. He is innocent. This is the Messiah." All of the people that he had raised from the dead, they didn't show up. The blind that he had restored sight, all of the people that he had done so much for, not a one of them stood up and said, "This is the Messiah." And you would think Peter, the one that he had had such a close relationship with, the one who had said, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God," when it counted, when Jesus needed Peter, Peter denied him. Not only did he deny him, he denied him three times. And the third time, he was even cursing so that he would not appear to have anything to do with him. When he did that the third time, Jesus made eye contact with him. Can you imagine the guilt of knowing what you have just done? Peter heard the cock crow, and immediately he knew, "I have denied the Messiah. I have denied my best friend, the person whom I stood up and said, 'I'll fight to the death for you.' I have turned my back on him." I can't imagine the kind of guilt there. Peter went out and wept bitterly, but he had already done it. In John chapter 21, Peter says to the other disciples, "I go a fishing." Now, I'm from Arkansas. It is one thing to say, "I'm going fishing," or, "Gee, I would like to have some fish for supper." But when you say, "I go a-fishing," that's a statement. I'm going to do a specific activity. Peter was saying, "I'm going back to my old life. I'm going back to the person that I was before I met Jesus. I don't know what else to do." I'm sure he was still racked with grief. I'm sure he was feeling alone insecure, afraid. There were people literally hunting them to kill them. And so he told the other disciples, hey, I'm going back to the old way. I'm going fishing. And they got out on the sea, you know the narrative, and they fished all night and there was nothing. And I'm sure that was a miserable night. But in the morning, Jesus was on the bank, and he had laid out bread and fish on the fire. One of the disciples, John 21:7, told him, that's Jesus. And it says, when Peter heard that it was the Lord, he girded his fisher's coat around him and cast himself into the sea, swam to Jesus. There is a scene in Forrest Gump. Y'all know the movie. You've watched the movie. You know, and he sees Private Dan. He sees his buddy. And he's coming in on a shrimp boat. And to see his buddy was so overjoyed, he bailed in. Just jumped off, let the boat go, forget the boat, there's my friend. I think Peter was kind of that moment. There is Jesus, the one that I have denied, the one that I am so sorry I let down. He's on the bank, and Peter dove in to go to him. And Jesus greeted him. What a fantastic story. What a fantastic narrative of understanding someone coming back. Okay, the reason I went through all of that was simply this. You are Peter. Let me say that again. You are Peter. You have been a child in a lot of ways. A rambunctious, you know, flamboyant, attempting kind of child. And I was the same way. I have done things in my life that I look back on now and I think, man, that was stupid. What was I thinking? What was I doing? Why did I do that? And there have been times in my life when I stood up and said the right thing and did the right thing. There have been times that I'm quite proud of. And there have been times when I denied the Son of God. Not that I denied him when I didn't know him. There have been times after I became a Christian when I let him down, when I turned my back on everything that's holy. See, I'm human, and so are you. We are all Simon Peter. There are some Peter, or some people, there are some people that Peter was not. Peter was not an Apostle Paul. Paul was a learned man. Paul was very educated. He was very strong. He really was an oak. He was someone that kind of did the right thing once he got on the right path. Peter was not that educated. In fact, scholars say if you look at 1 Peter, the grammar and the writing is very poor. If you look at 2 Peter, it's much improved, and they believe he probably got someone to help him write so that it would be much more understandable. Peter was not someone like Martin Luther, who nailed the thesis on the door and started the Protestant Reformation. He was not that kind of great man. He certainly wasn't a Billy Graham. He wasn't someone that pastored large crowds and had a lot of people. Peter was a common man. I don't know how else I can say it or how much I can do to drill it into us. Peter was a common man. He was you and I. So when Jesus is talking to Peter and saying, do you love me? Feed my sheep. He's talking to me, not just as a pastor of a church. He's talking to me as a Christian. And he's talking to you as a Christian person. You don't have to be a great orator. You don't have to be a wonderful musician. You don't have to attend a church with thousands of people. God is calling you to feed his sheep wherever you are. So what does this whole sheep feeding thing mean anyway? What does it mean to feed sheep? Caring for animals involves a lot more than throwing out a bale of round hay every great once in a while. It's much more involved in that. I knew a genuine old-time Texas rancher. There are not many of those around. There are a lot of people that have cows, but there are a few that are real cattlemen. M.E. Blakely was a cattleman, an old-time cattleman. He told me one time, and I didn't get it at the time. It took a long time before I understood what he meant. He said, I am not in the business, I'm not in the cattle business. He said, I am in the business of farming grass, raising grass. I am in the business of making clean water. I am in the business of clearing brush and shrubs. I'm in the veterinary business. I'm in the fence building business. In short, what I do is everything possible to make sure that those cows out there are well fed, have plenty of clean water, are safe, secure, have been vaccinated, etc., etc. My job is to care for them individually. And he counted them every single day. He went down, he would look at his cows, he knew all about them, he knew the ones that were going to have problems, he knew everything about them, and he cared for them. That's being a shepherd. That's being a cattleman. Behind our office, and I don't know the man that owns the property, have no idea who owns it or whose cows they are, but behind our office, there is some land and there are some cows on it. The land is overgrown in mesquites and scrub brush and black locust thorn trees and brush everywhere. And when you first look at it, the spots that aren't covered with brush, there's some green. But if you get up close, you'll realize that green is bitter weeds. And if you look below it, there's practically no grass for the cows to eat. One day, they're at the office, I saw one of them trying her best to tear the fence down so she could get out to the grass on the side of the road. Whomever that is owns cows, but he's not a cattleman. You see the difference? You and I are to feed sheep, and that means something very different from just inviting somebody to church once in a while. That's an involved process. If you looked at M.E. Blakely's pastures, and I've been all over them, they were clean, and the cows would be standing in Bermuda grass up to their bellies. He made sure of it. He sprayed for weeds, he fertilized, he cut the brush, he did all of those things to grow that grass crop. We have to do that for people if we're going to feed God's sheep. Well, not many of us are in the cattle business. In fact, most of us probably have no idea about cows. I haven't messed with them since 1978, so it's been a while since I dealt with that. So maybe we need to look at a different analogy, one that kind of speaks to us as who we are. To be successful in the service industry, you have to take care of your customers. Have you ever gone out to eat and the experience was just ruined because of service? We have kind of an ongoing joke, I guess you would say, story, especially between me and CW. Many years ago, many decades ago actually now, we were driving home from Florida and we stopped in New Orleans. And I was anxious to stop in New Orleans. I love Cajun food, right? And I had this built up in my mind, knew what I wanted. We went to an oyster house there in New Orleans. I don't remember which one, but we went in, sat down. I was ready to tie on the feed bag. Our waitress had a tag on named Flo. She acted like we were a real bother. It took forever, it seemed like, to get her to bring us a menu. Finally did. We ordered. We finally got some drinks, got our tea or whatever, and we waited and we waited. Had to chase somebody down to get more. On and on and on. The whole thing, it was just a disaster. We got part of order, not all of it. It wasn't right. On and on and on. And then when she brought the bill out, she got real friendly. How are you guys doing? Where are y'all from? You traveling back? She started walking away. I said, it's too late, Flo. you've missed your tip, right? If you're going to be in the service business, you have to take care of your customers. It's the same in my business. When I'm doing accounting, anybody can hire someone to fill out forms. What people want is someone who will sit down, talk to them about it, and say, look, here are some options. Here are some things you can do, and let's work through this. If you're going to be in the service industry, you must take care of your customers. If you're going to be an employer, if you're going to have employees, if you want to be successful as an employer, take care of your employees. The more you take care of them, the more they will take care of you. It is that simple. I used to work for I worked in an organization and had a boss that was terrible. I mean, honestly, he was. Any of you that have worked in school business, sometimes you get administrators, and some of them are great people, and some of them are not. And this was one that just flat wasn't. And there were some things that he did wrong, and I've thought a lot about those. Number one, he would blame his subordinates for anything that went wrong, even though most of the time it was his fault. So when he did something wrong, he would make sure he blamed one of his subordinates. He would ask his subordinates to lie for him. That was one that always just got under my skin. If there was a bill that hadn't been paid, or something of that sort that he was holding on to for whatever reason, he would tell his secretary when they called, tell him I'm not here, or tell him I've already mailed it, when she knew he hadn't. We knew it was a lie. He would ask or tell, wouldn't really ask, he would command his subordinates to lie for him. And he would lie to them. He would tell them that things were a certain way when they were not. He would tell them that he was trying to get them a raise or time off or this or that, when in fact he was doing just the opposite. He had no respect for them. And I'm going to tell you something. It didn't take long till they found out. They knew. All of his employees, subordinates, knew exactly what he was, and they knew how he treated him. They despised him, and they did only what they absolutely had to do to keep their job. And that's all they'd do. It was a disaster, and it ended up costing him a great deal. Because of these and many other subordinates, his employees did not respect him. I have worked in organizations where leaders had the respect of their employees. When they sat them down and they said, look, here's the deal. I'll never lie to you. I'll never lie about you. If I make a mistake, I'll say it's my mistake. And people, that is important in church. That is important. And in that vein, I have a confession to make. Candy and Randy Holmes got these inserts for the Voice of the Martyrs, and this is an important thing. They put them in the bulletins last week, and I dropped the ball. I should have talked about these from the pulpit. I encourage you, as you go out this evening, pick one of these up, and seriously, give them a call or fill it out. There's a little thing on it you can fill out, send it in, no postage necessary. They'll send you the literature. There are people around the world in churches today who are risking their lives to worship our Savior. We ought to be involved in that, and I should have been more on the ball, and I apologize for that. As Christians, all of us, when we do something wrong, when we make a mistake, when we do whatever wrong, have the courage and the faith to stand up and say, that was my fault. I did that. I'm wrong. I'm sorry. And let's move forward. Let's fix it. Church is like a wagon wheel. I did a sermon on this one time. I won't do that whole sermon again, but it was a fabulous sermon. It really was. I brought a wagon wheel into church and put it right down in front of the altar. and we dissected that wagon wheel and compared it to church. You know, wagon wheels have a hub, and a lot of people are in that hub. They are right at the center. They are involved in everything. They're right there where the friction occurs, the hub rotating around the axle, and things get pretty hot and pretty difficult. Then you move out, there are spokes, and there are people who are the spokes of the church. They are the ones that kind of hold a lot of things together, and they meet the people on the outside, and they meet the people on the inside. They're the ones that kind of put us together. And then outside of that, on the very outside, there is a rim. And that rim keeps the whole thing from coming apart. And I could go on and on and on. There's a lot more to cover there. But here's the gist of it. Unless you have the entire wheel, unless you put it all together, you get nowhere. You can have the greatest hub in the world, but without the rest of it, it's dragging on the ground. You can have a fantastic rim, but if everything's not fitting in it, it's little more than a child's toy. Church is like a wheel. We're a group. We're an organization. And we all ought to care for each other and care for the people that come in here. When Jesus says, "Feed my sheep," He's talking to you and I. Let's be like employers and support each other, like the good employer that's honest with each other and that supports each other. I had an administrator one time that I worked with, and I was going through school and trying to do a lot of things, and he told me, he said, I was a younger guy then, thank God, said, "Son, I'll help you in any way I can, and if you get to a point where you outgrow us and you need to move on, go on. I understand." See, he cared more about me than what he wanted. As Christians, we need to be that way with each other. We need to genuinely love each other, care for each other, and take care of each other. Like the cattleman, we need to be in the grass business. We need to be learning and studying and teaching each other. We need to be caring for each other, and this church does. I love that. I love that when someone is sick or when there is a problem, we have people that stand up readily and say, "I'll take a meal to them. I'll pray for them. I'll go get them and help them. I'll do whatever I can." That's what we do because we're an organization together. We're all in this together, and we're moving from this life to heaven. To feed Jesus' sheep, be a servant. I'll tell you the secret to life, and this is honest as I know how to be. If you want to be successful, be a servant. If you do for other people, honestly, they'll do for you. If people understand that you genuinely care for them and you love them and you want to help them, they'll help you. If you want to be a success, being a Christian, being a business person, being whatever, be a servant. Maybe that's why Jesus said, "Let he that is greatest among you be the servant of all." That's the way that works. If you want to be great, be a servant. You know, having my family, I understood that a little bit at least. I have tried hard to take care of my children. I want them to have better than I had. Becky and I both do. We want them to do better than we did. I think we got that from our parents. You know, they started life in a shipping crate, literally. Mom and Dad built their first little house out of nothing but just an old shipping crate. Neither of them had an education. They were determined that they wanted their kids to do better than they did. And we have been kind of the same way. I want to see my kids do better than I do. And I've worried about them. Back in the day when they were in high school, we begged, pleaded, cajoled, threatened, did everything we could do to make sure they stayed in there, got good grades, and didn't get in trouble. We knew their friends. They didn't go running around with people that we didn't know. We knew who they were. I didn't always approve, but I knew who they were, and I knew where they were at. This is a complete side note, but you saw some of these kids that shoot up schools, and they say, well, Mom and Dad didn't know. Geez, they had bulletproof vests and assault rifles and dark clothes, and they wore white makeup. You didn't kind of get an idea something might not be right here, right? If you're going to be a real parent, you'll know. If you're going to feed God's sheep, know. Know each other, care for each other, and care for each other more than you care for yourself. We are called to love one another more than we love ourselves. That's the way you do marriage. That's the way you do family. That's the way you do friendship. That's the way you do church. I want our musicians to come. We love being part of this church, and I hope you do also. As family, as church members, let's reach out to each other and let's reach out to lost people and encourage them, bring them in. Doesn't mean you have to approve of their lifestyle, but you can bring them in and show them that you love them. When I started to church, when I really got involved in church, it wasn't because we had a fantastic minister that was just a great orator. It wasn't because of the music. I can tell you why I went to church. I found there people who honestly cared for me, and they showed that concern and that caring. The world is a cold, cold place. If God's people will build a fire, the world will come in and warm by it. That's a good thought on a day like today. Please stand.